Uncle Owen! It's R2 unit has a bad motivator, look!
Having trouble with your droid? Your droid?
These two droids. Both are hardworking and will serve you well.
Droid. 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 We serve their kind here.
You're listening to We Serve Droids, your favorite monthly Star Wars podcast. I'm Scott.
And I'm Chris.
And we are back to finally wrap up our watch through this wonderful first season of Andor.
Andor?
Andor. Too many doors to choose from.
I know.
It's a regular Monty Hall problem over here.
It took me an embarrassingly long time to understand the game theory behind that.
Man, that is a mindfuck for sure. Speaking of game theory, Chris, what do you say we play a game before we chat about Andor?
All right, as long as I don't have to explain to you why it's always better to swap doors.
Well, I don't have a name for this game yet.
All right.
You know how we've had some previous games that involved a big box of Star Trek toys from my parents' house?
Oh, yeah.
Well, now I have a big box of more appropriate Star Wars toys from my parents' house. And earlier today, I recorded my six-year-old son, Miles, who knows nothing of Star Wars except who R2-D2 is. That's literally all he knows. And he will describe these toys for you to try to guess what it's a toy of.
Oh, this is going to be great. I can't wait.
Let's say, so I've got four of these recordings, and let's say okay. If you get two, then we're going to call that a win, okay?
All right. Bar's pretty high. We'll see what I can do.
Shall we play a game?
So I'm going to give you the toy, and you're going to describe what you see and hold so Chris can guess what it is, okay?
Okay.
All right. I'm getting the first toy out of the closet. And we can unbox it. What does that look like?
It looks a little like weirdy.
All right. Can you try to describe it so Chris can guess what it is? What is there?
It's a little old. He looks a little old. And he kind of has on like a white robe or something.
Mm-hmm. What stuff does he have with him?
Like a gun and stuff.
Do you have any idea what these things are? Yes, I have.
Some necklaces.
How many?
Three necklaces.
All right, do you want to say anything else about the guy? Like what kind of hair he has? Or all right, good luck, Chris.
Man, so an old guy with a white robe and three necklaces.
According to Miles.
Is he holding the necklaces as if to just distribute them? That's the question.
That's not a bad route to guess.
Did they make a Dodonna action figure from back when we were kids? Will we have that?
This is so good, Chris. You have hit it right on the head.
Oh, man.
It is General Jan Dodonna with three medals.
Yes.
As accessories. Yes. And apparently a gun for some reason.
Hey, he's got to keep Chewie at bay. Yeah. No medal for Chewbacca.
I got your medal right here. All right. Well, you're going to knock two out of the park. I thought I should have made this three, but I was a little worried if that would be too tough.
Okay. We'll see. I was really shooting in the dark there. Like, what old guy has a white robe?
Wears a robe in Star Wars is the most unspecific.
Right.
All right, Miles, you ready for the second toy?
Yep.
Try to describe this.
Well, he's kind of a little alien-y, and he looks a little brown, and he has, like, tubes or something, whatever those are. And, like, weird eyes and stuff.
What do his weird eyes look like?
They look like fly eyes a little.
That's a good description. You want to say anything else about him?
No.
All right. Good luck, Chris.
He's brown. He's got fly eyes. Is that a Jawa, maybe?
Not a Jawa.
Not a Jawa.
He's a little alien-y.
He's brown. Fly eyes. Oh, man. I'm trying to think of like action figures from my childhood and trying to like figure out what this guy is. Maybe an Ewok?
So, not that this helps you. Oddly enough, it's one of those 12-inch toys.
Oh, okay. Not as familiar with those. So, okay. So, brown alien. It's not like Chewbacca, is it?
No, it's not Chewbacca, famous for his bug eyes.
I mean, I'm scrambling here.
There were tubes. Tubes were in the description.
I didn't hear tubes. All right, tubes. Brown tubes.
Our listener is just screaming the answer right now.
Probably.
He's from The Empire Strikes Back, and I would say he has no lines. Well, to find who this person might be, Chris, you should probably hire a team of bounty hunters, and on that team would be one Zuckus.
Oh, Zuckus. Oh, okay.
Tubes and fly eyes, and a little alien-y.
Man, I'm more impressed you have a 12-inch Zuckus. That's awesome.
So, I should have warned you up front that, much like my Star Trek toys, like, there could be the most, this is like, you know, it's Christmas Eve, and what is left on the shelf is often my toy collection.
I didn't even know they made a 12-inch Zuckus. I kind of want that now. That's man, that's great. All right.
You ready for toy number three?
Yep.
Let's open this box.
This looks funny.
What do you think about this guy?
He's a little, like, blue, and he has, like, he's, like, a little weird, and he has, like, a super long robe on.
Does it look like it would be a fun toy to play with?
Yeah, but it's also a little crazy.
Do you want to describe his head or anything?
His mouth and eyes look a little red.
All right. Anything else about his head you want to say?
And there's like some long things coming down from it.
Would you describe his body? Would you say he looks like he would be light or heavy?
Heavy.
Yeah, I think so too. Do you think he looks young or old?
Old.
Do you think he's a good guy or a bad guy?
Bad guy.
Okay. Good luck, Chris.
All right.
Real checklist of clues there.
Blue guy with a robe. He's not like the emperor's like Senate lackey, is he? I forget what that guy's name is. He's like the president pro term of the Senate or whatever. Like he's there because when the chancellor can't bother to show up, right?
I think you're actually thinking of a different guy. But it's funny. Practically most of it would work for that guy. So that guy is not this person.
Okay.
This person is heavier than that person.
I'm throwing in the towel on this one too. I get nothing.
Do you remember the representative of Ryloth, Ornfree Tah? Does that do anything for you?
Is he on the Legion of Doom, the Separatist Legion of Doom.
He looks like he has a bit of like a clay face kind of bit to him.
Oh, this guy. He's got to be the same species as the guy I'm thinking about, surely.
No, this is a Twi'lek. That other guy, gosh, what is that guy's name?
Wait. Ornfree Tah's a Twi'lek?
Yes.
Oh, man, it all went straight to his head tentacles.
Yeah, he's... You know, ate the whole bib. He ate the tuna and the bib.
Yeah, that was a... Oof.
Could you imagine a worse toy to have than an Ornfree Tah?
All right. I'm imagining Scott on Christmas morning unwrapping his Ornfree Tah.
All right, here it is to salvage the win, Chris.
Yeah.
All right, toy number four is the last one. It's not as hard as the previous one, but it's a jumbo toy. You ready to see it, Miles?
Jumbo toy.
Wow, this is ginormous.
What do you see?
I cannot believe it's this.
Can you describe it to Chris?
It looks like this. It's like, it looks like there's just like this guy on like a giant dinosaur thingy.
Oh, man.
Whatever it is. It looks like he's riding it.
It's hard to get out of the box. Yeah. We'll have to get him out later.
And it kind of looks weird. It kind of looks weird. Like, all of these things look weird, but, like, each one gets weirder.
You're right about that
one. This is the weirdest one.
Do you want to say anything about what he's riding? Describe it.
It's a little, like, furry and gray white. And it has, like coins or something on it, whatever those are.
If this was real and lived somewhere on the earth, where do you think it would live?
In the desert.
Okay. All right. Thanks so much, Miles. You were a big help on the podcast. Can you say, thanks for listening to We Serve Droids?
Thanks for listening to We Serve Droids.
Oh, I thought I knew what it was, and now I'm not sure.
I wouldn't trust his everything.
I'm going to shoot my shot here. Is this either Han or Luke on a Tauntaun?
It is.
Yes.
And I think it's a Luke on Tauntaun. I'm still giving it to you.
Please, it's too much winning.
I was thinking like Stormtrooper on Dewback when he was talking like about a guy riding a dinosaur. It's like, oh man, that's got to be something like that.
You want to jump into this last few episodes of Andor?
Let's do it.
What do we start with? We start with a robot that's very sad, right?
Yeah, man, nothing more sadder than a sad robot.
And the robot is sad because its mother figure and the titular Andor's mother figure, Marva, has died, right?
Yeah.
I like that after the body is, I don't know, like first prepped, it's kind of like put on like a forklift and kind of like run through the streets.
I had the same thought. It's a very... Like a worker's working class funeral or whatever, right?
Yeah, we've kind of made this point before that it's almost like their whole religion is very like industrial or proletariat, mm-hmm. urban proletariat.
Yeah, I mean, as we'll see too, their practicality knows no ends even in death, right?
That's right. Yeah, we're told later that she's to be bricked, right? Which has happened to many Xbox first generation, right? Every dead Xbox has found a wall to be placed upon.
They're certainly dense enough. Man, those things were heavy.
Yeah, that Imperial officer or Stormtrooper would not have survived. It would have been like the Boba Fett gaffy stick, you know, that just like... Right.
So remind me here, they didn't really... address like this is how we were introduced to her death, right? Like it's not something that overtly happened in the previous episode, is it?
Yeah, that's right. I think we were given a little bit of foreshadowing that the doctors have been by and that, you know, she's not up for rebelling around like she wants to.
Right.
But we did not see her bite the proverbial bullet. But, you know, meanwhile, Andor is still back on prison planet, isn't he?
Right. And it turns out, you know, if you just swim off from the prison, there's more to escape than that. You know, when spaceships that can fly around, you know, pick you off from orbit or whatever.
Yeah, I do feel a little bit cheated in that the last episode made it seem like it was this huge, you know, jailbreak and thousands of people are making it out, and now I feel like maybe only two made it out. I don't know. Like, do you think some are, like, surviving, like, living off, you know, fish and stuff?
Maybe. I mean, it seems like, you know, because these guys were, I think we first see Andor, they're like, him and the other guy are hanging off the side of a cliff, just trying to dodge a patrol. That's, yeah, you wonder about, you know, what happened to everybody else, right? Because there's probably no, you know, immediate way off the planet. I think these guys are just here, scavenging the two guys they run into.
You mean the trolls from The Hobbit?
Right. Man, I had to turn on some subtitles with these guys. I don't know about you.
I have no idea what they said. I did not turn on subtitles. One of them had like a Captain Hook hand, and they just kind of mumbled about stuff the whole time.
If you're so inclined, just turn back on subtitles. But they were kind of, I don't know if they were supposed to be natives, but they were kind of, you know, lamenting that, you know, the prison has essentially, you know, ruined their ecosystem, right?
They can't, you know, the prison labor is like underbidding all their contracts.
Oh no, like they said, like, you know, like the water's poison now, can't catch any fish, right? They're not big fans of the Empire.
Nothing but mutton. Yeah, the amount of like human waste out of that prison has got to be enough to wreck an ecosystem, you know.
Yeah, I'm sure whatever they use that hydro for, it probably irradiates the water just for good measure, right?
Every time they turn on like the thing that electrocutes anyone not wearing Back to the Future sneakers, it just like obliterates all the fish. Yeah. They just float to the top, you know, like dynamiting the pond. Yeah, so luckily for Andor and his like prison break buddy, this guy has anti-imperial sentiments, unlike, you know, Hans Gruber Mole Man from Obi-Wan.
Right.
But I do like that they called him, and like they kind of get like Spider-Man'd when they try to run for the ship.
I like that it's a net, but it's also wet. Just for maximum discomfort.
Yeah. Just kill me. Don't shut me in a wet thing.
The ship they got to is kind of fun. It's the from Force Awakens. It was the ship they almost ran to before it blew up. When Rey and Finn are kind of running around.
The one that looks good, and they have to go into the junky piece of crap Millennium Falcon instead. Wow, I did not catch on to that.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Just, you know, kind of. Right, I mean, because it's like four big engines and like a little hull or whatever.
Yeah, I like Andor's sort of like skepticism. Like, do you know how to drive this? Like, we'll see. You need a Ben Quadranero to drive a four-engined vehicle, don't you?
Oh, that's a good point. That's a good point. Not just any man can do it. It's like a, you know, like a four-horse team or whatever, like in a stagecoach. Not anybody can do that.
So luckily, these guys let the prison break buddies ford the river with them, and they are off to Miami Vice Planet, aren't they?
Yes.
I know it's skipping some stuff, but when they get there, I guess what? They have to sneak into Andor's old hotel room?
Man, I am just shocked that, unlike Miami Vice Planet, there's not people just hiding all kinds of shit up, you know, above the shower all the time, you know, in the guest room.
Yeah. Amidst the drugs and the pornography, you know, Andor's able to find his safe of money, and most importantly of all, the Nimic Manifesto. I was really worried about that thing's presence.
The sacred text, right, Scott?
Yeah, I mean, seriously, like, because it had been quite a few episodes since that thing was just left high and dry.
I mean, you got to think it's been there. Did we kind of figure out how long he had been there in the last episode we talked about? He'd probably been there for, what, a few months, right? Something like that?
Yeah, it seemed like it was a bit. I forget. It was like 40 or 50 days. I can't remember.
Yeah, somewhere in that neighborhood.
Speaking of sacred texts, if we want to hop over to Coruscant, I guess Mon Mothma's daughter is, like, in Sunday school and, like, you know, narratively, the weird thing is she just, like, loves going to Sunday school. And Mon Mothma and Val are just utterly disgusted by how much she loves Sunday school, aren't they?
Yeah, I got the gist that it was kind of the same kind of general, you know, Shindrillan thing that was, you know, behind, like, arranged marriages and stuff like that maybe they weren't the biggest fans of. you know, that's kind of the vibe I got from that.
I got like the, you know how like the Mormon kids stay late after school to go to like seminary or whatever in Utah? Mm-hmm. It had that kind of feel to me. But even without the threat of arranged marriage, Val is like very grossed out by the idea of any kid liking Sunday school. Right? I mean, they talk about like how much trouble Mothma is in, like financially, but I think they're way more troubled by the fact that the daughter is memorizing Bible verses.
I love that they you know, Val thought that, you know, someone must be shoving it down her throat. There's no way that they, you know, she'd do this of her own volition, right?
No, she's been around kids before. Kids don't like Sunday school.
Yeah.
it's a known fact. So, you know, this episode is fast and furious, hitting lots of people, right? Because we get a real great blast from the past here on Coruscant, don't we?
I'm trying to see here. So we're back. Are you talking about back at the our favorite mother's apartment?
Yes, yes. And who puts in a Zoom call but a guy we have not seen for a long time?
Oh, yeah, your favorite sergeant and mine.
God, we love this guy, don't we?
Hello, sergeant.
Apologies, sir, and to the family.
I love whatever job he has now. this whole interaction was so much fun. Yeah. Like, he's in some sort of like industrial factory on like his, you know, like his 5 minutes, you know, 5 minute break he gets every 24 hours, right? Making a phone call.
Right. He's in like worse working conditions than Andor had in prison.
Right. Like the only place you take a break is like in the corner, you know, as close to the factory floor as possible. I think he has to stop and like shield his eyes at one point during the phone call.
That's perfect. I love the confidence. It's like, kind of like the, you know, you kind of get this around your, like the older person who doesn't hear well and just has the confidence of like believing they heard it when they didn't.
Right. It's so great.
Good to see you.
Yes. Yes, I think so. I'm on the night shift.
It's a real, like, you know, will you be dining in? Oh, I'm doing well, thank you. You know, kind of moment.
Just roll with it.
Yeah. Yeah. So our favorite sergeant is getting the whole gang back together, right?
Oh, yeah. This was a lot of fun.
I mean, I love the sergeant almost as much as Mon Mothma's daughter loves bringing her allowance in an envelope to Sunday school to donate.
Yeah.
And speaking of money, I guess, does Cyril, like, steal from his mom?
Yeah, I was going to say, I love the mom just you know, lingering in the car, in the corridor, the entire phone call, too.
Oh, yeah. She's a lingering type, isn't she?
But yeah, I think he waits for her to leave to go wherever she goes, and... Yeah, like that thing had like a little voiceover, like, you know, safe open, safe close, when he stole those, you know, the gold, Imperial Nazi gold or whatever out of her out of her little nightstand or whatever that thing was.
If Uncle Arlo were to find out about this, Chris, I mean, his career prospects would be ruined.
It's just such a bright man trying to turn it around. Where did she go wrong, Scott?
Yeah, she needs to, like, I guess, keep her money in, like, an ice cream maker that he doesn't know the combination to.
Right. He's known that since, you know, he was 12.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, when she found his Nimic manifestos, she used to lock him away in there that he kept above the shower.
And then back in our character onslaught, if you want to jump around, too, we've got some more Saul Guerrera action.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. I mean, this show paid for its Forrest Whitaker, and they're going to get their money's worth, aren't they?
Oh, man. Do you think he's regretting whatever contract he signed at this point when he took the Saw gig in Rogue One?
Look, sir.
What have we here?
Look, sir.
Oh, what a mess.
With the blast shield down, I can't even see.
Look, sir.
These aren't the droids you're looking for.
This was, I think, probably, I would guess, the Saul Luthen stuff was probably my favorite part of episode 11.
I think we talked about their banter last time when they were, you know, kind of both, you know, Saul was prying him about the job, and Luthen was just throwing it right back at him. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's a lot less fun this time, isn't it?
Yeah, because they're, you know, he was trying to coax Saul into going with the was it Krieger, I think?
Sure, why not? Let's go with Krieger.
Go with Krieger on I think whatever raid that they had, he was just going to let him eat it on, right? Because, you know, he found out the ISB knew about it.
Yeah. So in the meantime, Saul has like decided like, what the hell? I'm going to go in with Krieger. I'm all about, like, I hated the plan before, but now I like the plan. Mm-hmm. And now Luthen's like, change of plan. Krieger's going to die. And I like the kind of hint of the paranoid Saul that we get in Rogue One here.
Oh, yeah. He's like, you know, you're either ISB or what? Like, you're just trying to get me killed or something like that, right?
Yeah. And I like the worry that, like, you know, you probably have an insider on my crew.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Because Luthen, what, plays the Corrin or whatever in the room just to be able to pull his blaster on Saul so he'll actually listen to him? Or whoever that guy is in the face mask. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a fun bit of, like, you know, an experiment, because the whole point is we have to give up Krieger or else the ISB will start to get suspicious. Mm. And the way to make that point was to make Saul suspicious. And I thought that was a really like just deft bit of writing, wasn't it?
Yeah, you're right. Cause I think he says they'll be as suspicious as, you know, as you are being right now. That's a great point.
Yeah. Our buddy Krieger's a master of rhetoric, it seems. Not Krieger. Sorry. Our buddy Luthen. Krieger's a master of dying off screen.
Dying valiantly.
Yeah, when Miles describes the Krieger action figure, that's going to be real tough to get.
It's just a pile of ashes.
Yeah, he looks very off-screeny.
Yeah.
Krieger's got Big Sir not appearing in this film vibes.
Right. I think at some point, too, I'm trying to, we hit so many places in this, like we get some more antique shop action, right, while Luthen's gone. I think a little bit earlier.
Yeah, I guess Val like tries to check in with Luthen, mm-hmm, whilst Luthen is at the hole in the wall Saul Guerrera gang, and the sort of, like, you know, rebel secretary is none too pleased to see Val not following protocol, because, you know, you're supposed to like break the napkin and draw a question mark with the lipstick and like crumple and, you know, there's a whole 30 things you have to do when you want to meet. Like, she's like, I really like that montage, you know, get some tense music as I follow the, we didn't get to do that. And that's the best part of her day.
I love the, you know, having like trying to have a veiled conversation when it's just the two of you in the shop, you know, never knowing who might be listening at any point in time. It's a lot of fun with the two of them.
Val is kind of like, doesn't want to have it, does she?
No. Yeah. It's like you're you know, like your cousin was collecting, you know, jewelry, wasn't she? Just, you know, so much fun.
Yeah. Val is the worst, like, improv partner. She cannot yes and yeah, this cousin looking for jewelry thing at all. You know, there's no like, yeah, I had another client that I thought we had, you know, I mean, like, none of that. It's just straight up. It's a real, like, Liam Neeson trying to do improv.
Right.
I've contracted AIDS.
Tell you who is good at the improv game, and that's Luthen himself, because when he puts a call in to the secretary, they, you know, get right to it. They are like doing like all sorts of fun bits of like, did you acquire the piece? There's another buyer. Yeah. Like,
right.
They're so good at it. I love the joy of their misdirected conversation.
Yeah, we'll have to close the shop down if we don't get this piece. Yeah, it's great.
And I think he's a bit kind of like riding high after. It's like the adrenaline high of, like, I just pulled a gun on Saul Guerrera and it worked. And I think that influences his decision to go to Ferrix, right? The secretary, I think, kind of wisely cautions against it. But I think psychologically it's that he's you know, he's hit, like he's rolled too many sevens at the craps table. Like he needs to stop now, but there's no way he will.
I mean, I think you can see that also too. And before, I guess, as he's leaving Saw Gerrera planet, right? The run in with the patrol.
Yeah.
This is one of my favorite little sequences. So there's this what would you call this thing?
I would call this a DirecTV class Star Destroyer.
There you go. So yeah, I guess Luthen's leaving Saw Gerrera planet, right? I think he just got off the phone, with home base. He's got to acquire the new piece now, a Star Destroyer that was just designed for maximum satellite coverage. You know, is following him, right? Wanting to check him out since there's pirate activity in the air, which I'm guessing is entirely due to Saw, right?
Yeah. How many channels do you think the Star Destroyer gets? I mean, it's like 500. Like, nothing is scrambled for the Star Destroyer.
Oh, no. Like, this is getting, like, you know, the those weird channels that are just, like, the raw feeds from, like, the television studio where you can see, like, the anchor picking their nose in between commercials, right? All those crazy ones. That's what it's got.
Yeah, there's not a hotel in America that has as much satellite TV as this one. Like,
no.
There's that, like, weird, like, program with, like, the old lady in Canada talking about sex.
Oh, yeah. Who are you talking about?
Anytime I was in a hotel and thought, hell yeah, go watch some Skinamax right now, it was always like that weird, like, ask an 80-year-old lady how to give a blowjob show that just kind of, right, like, was did not like deliver on the promise of a free Cinemax. Sorry. Oh, man. So yeah, they're trying to, like, tell him he needs his, like, license and registration, right? They want Luthen's,
right?
Luthen's, yeah, is your papers?
Yeah, they're running plates, you know, right? So they're Luthen asks his magic. Now, do we give that thing a name? His magic computer AI.
Yeah, it's kind of got like Flight of the Navigator, Pee Wee Herman guy.
Right.
Yeah.
So he asks him for plates, and then he's just very dismissive of the. Of the patrol, I think, trying to get, you know, tractor beamed in at this point, would you say? Or what did you think about
that? He's like, it's like a death by police kind of thing. Like, he's called the cops, right, in to shoot, yeah, him. You think it's like a Wonka Vader, I've never pressed this button kind of thing? Like, he's been playing it safe so long, but he's had this car with the super nifty shit. And he's like, right, I've never pressed this button on the Wonka Vader, and I, by God, I'm doing it today.
Exactly. Like, he's, you know, this is very brazen for Luthen, I'd imagine.
Yeah, they do the whole spiel, and I mean, his little jet has all kinds of tricks, doesn't it? It's got, like, I mean, let's just say he's a lot better prepared for a tractor beam than the Millennium Falcon ever was.
Right. I mean, he has the brilliant idea of, you know, hey, if someone's just pulling you, just, you know, throw shit at it until it breaks, right?
Really? Yeah. Maybe that's why they didn't have DirecTV class Star Destroyers by A New Hope.
Just a massive design flaw. You just start throwing trash out the window, and that'll take care, mm-hmm, of it.
Yeah. Also, his ship has, like, a Darth Maul lightsaber attached to it.
Right. What's like, he it's like he shoots down like a TIE bomber, right? Taking down the biggest threat first that comes after him after he gets free. And he nails the other two TIEs. So, you know, I get the sense that he doesn't need to do this. This is just another button he hasn't pressed yet, right?
Right.
And he does like a flyby of the bridge of this little cruiser before he leaves. Like, he is just begging to get caught.
Yeah, it's a real, you know, make the coffee spill on the bridge for the guy who wants butts kind of moment on that flyby.
It is.
And the episode ends with the prison break boys standing on the shores of San Watanao, right?
Yeah, it's the most depressing concrete beach you'll ever see.
You know what the Mexicans say about concrete, Chris, that it has no memory. And Cassian learns of the death of his mother. And this other guy is like, well, I guess I'll leave the story. I was only paid for 3 episodes.
Right. I'll see you next season, maybe, depending.
Right. You know, that guy is in Rogue One.
Is he?
Yeah, he's like a Cassian buddy in Rogue One.
That's fantastic. I had no idea.
Did not know that my first watch through either. I think I read it somewhere.
That's great.
You better have those units from the soft lanes repaired by midday or it'll be hell to pay.
We'll see you in hell. See you in hell. See you in hell.
So where does the next episode pick up?
So the next episode, Rick's Road, I think we, let me fire it up here. I think we open on Ferrix with a ominous electronic and soldering, right?
Oh, ominous soldering. Yeah, it's that guy creating the IED whose dad owned the UHF radio antenna or the TV antenna, right?
Right, yeah. And then we get the arrival of our favorite ISB officer on Ferrix.
I think it's really cool the way that this kind of almost throwaway character, like the son of another character, becomes so instrumental to this episode. And I mean instrumental in like an emotional sense.
Right.
There's that kind of famous, semi-famous line of Hitchcock where he says, like, you know, if the bomb explodes, you know, you have action or something. But if you show the bomb under the table, you have suspense.
Mm-hmm.
It's something like that. And I feel like this is, you know, kind of playing that tune, isn't it?
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's not immediately clear what he's doing, but, you know, you know, that look of determination, you know, he's got his dead father's hologram up. You know what he's doing. You know, he doesn't have like TNT wired to an alarm clock or anything, but you know what his purpose is.
He's more subtle than every 90s action movie. Right. He has not constructed something that MacGruber will have to deactivate. But yeah, so Deidre hops in. She did not have a lot to do last episode, did she?
Yeah, I think we saw her kind of skulking around, right? Just kind of watching the house comings and goings, but that was about it, right?
Mm-hmm. And then, oh, sorry, Deidre's the Gestapo lady.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes.
Yeah, not Senta, I think, is the...
I cannot get people's names straight in Andor. I apologize.
Well, this is a recurring theme of our podcast.
This is true. Yeah, so yeah, Deidre shows up on wow.
Ferrix,
thank you. Oh, my God. And ends up, you know, going like on a little walkabout, right? You know, incognito around town.
Their incognito is very fur jackety in its level of conspicuity, isn't it?
Do you remember when there's some old footage of like, you know, like I think it was Rudy Giuliani in like a, he's in like a Hell's Angels vest with like a white button down, like trying to buy crack from somebody or something, like trying to go undercover. It's about that level, it seems like.
Yeah. That photo is so fun. It's like one step away from like the Steve Buscemi, like, hello, fellow teenagers.
Right.
What can you say? Lots of fun Rudy Giuliani pictures lately. yeah, it's utterly delightful to me. It's utterly delightful to me, like, how bad the ISB people are blending in, given that spycraft is kind of a thing.
Right.
But I would say that, you know, one of the interesting things this last episode does is, like, I mean, it's something a lot of finales will do, and the idea is you've had these disparate characters, and you pull them, you know, like, kind of gravitationally pull them all back to the same spot. And that's true for, like, all of what I would say are the show's centers of gravity, except for Mon Mothma.
Right. She's not showing up on Ferrix. You
know? No, narratively, it makes no sense. But I also think that, like, her character has felt to me the most, like, psychologically isolated of all of them, which is saying a lot.
Because,
you know, the characters are going to prison and giving speeches about how they've sacrificed everything and, you know, and being fascist, you know, all the things that make it hard to connect.
I mean, I think there's a great cut here too. I think while you know, this guy's building this bomb, right? And they cut to, you know, Mon Mothma, like, you know, leaving like an event or something, just sitting in her limo, right?
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, such a, you know, sharp contrast, obviously, but there's like I think she opens like her coat or something, and you just get the impression that she's just feeling, you know, trapped or claustrophobic or, you know, in her situation as well. It's just, you know, either end of the spectrum, no one is having fun under the Empire.
Yeah, the open the button is such a fascinating moment. I think that there's a thousand places this show excels, and that's one of them. Like, these little throwaway transitions that do such heavy lifting. I mean, I think we're, like, not to break the spell of We Serve Droids, but I think we're, like, kind of three episodes into Ahsoka, and I don't feel like it has, like, these moments.
Yeah, I agree with you there. It is, Andor is just such a, just the subtlety, like you were saying, is just, it's not present in every other show.
But I guess, you know, this whole scene in the Coupe de Ville is quite interesting.
You know the problem she has, and you know what she's doing. You know, especially as soon as she asks for privacy, you know, there's, it's essentially just asking him to listen in to their conversation.
Yeah, so just to set the stage for any listeners who might, you know, it's been a while since the show came out, might need a refresher what's going on. Mon Mothma's daughter loves Sunday school, and she's trying to find something to blame that on. No, she's got to cover up for, like, you know, create some kind of, like, secondary cover for the financial activities, right?
Just giving... You know, assuming that someone is looking into it and just giving them a reason for, you know, where a large sum of money might have gone to.
Mm-hmm. And I like that even though the show has given us no shortage of her husband being a real piece of shit, it still feels bad what she's doing, right? Like, she's using him in a way that feels a little icky, doesn't it?
I used to be a piece of shit.
Yeah, I mean, I got the impression that she does feel bad about that. You know, she's so deep in that, you know, no one is beyond being used for, you know, for her ends.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we'll come back to that with such a fascinating way for the show to end. Is it
right?
It doubles down on that with her daughter, but I think it's pretty fascinating that, like, her only way out is to kind of exploit her family relationships. And again, everyone else is colliding and she is isolated, and she's further isolating herself by kind of selling out her family to make this work.
Yeah. Her cousin really is, you know, strangely the freer one who's out there, you know, like on Ferrix, you know, getting shot at and, you know, pulling jobs. And yeah, it's such a great way to look at it.
Yeah, so Andor's on Ferrix. Everyone's on Ferrix, right? It's a real party on Ferrix. But when you're on Ferrix, you miss, much like us on screen, the death of Krieger. And Anton Krieger? Let's go with that. That sounds like it could be right.
Anton? I like that.
And Deidre is none too pleased that Krieger was killed instead of brought in.
Right. She at least wanted to be part of the conversation, something like that. And
yeah,
old Commandant Qyburn's having to talk her down.
Yeah, he's like, look, your squad is on Ferrix, and this other squad is on Krieger, and you've got 18 story points this sprint. And so you really don't have any bandwidth for Krieger, right? I mean, pick up a ticket when you have bandwidth, but you don't have any.
Right. See you at the next scrum meeting.
God, I hate my life. um, But I think I like that because it kind of redoubles her resolve to bring in Andor alive,
right?
Of which no one else involved seems to care about.
No one gives a single shit about anyone living on Ferrix, it seems. Right. Who is Imperial, that is.
Right. Well, or our rebels. They more explicitly want him dead.
Yeah. I guess the takeaway is she's the only one who doesn't want Andor dead.
Mm-hmm.
Including Andor at one point, but we'll get to that.
Gosh, yeah. I mean, his coming here is a bit of a death wish. Luthen, you remember last time, I think he took the bus into town, but he's mm-hmm. just going to ride his motorcycle here.
Yeah, needs to get away quick. He knows what's going to be going down, right?
But Cyril and the sergeant are riding, I think, the very same monorail, aren't they?
Oh, I think you're absolutely right. I love their, I guess it's to maybe throw off like any kind of surveillance, but their little hat swap.
I thought that's a good. I'd wondered, are they like exchanging messages? But maybe, the tracking system crooks on hats.
Right.
Some strange reason.
I don't know. That was my guess as to what they were doing, but it was just, it's such a. That's a great little intro to they're both being on planet.
I like it because they're such nerds. It's like such a, they pre-planned this moment, didn't they?
they had you know, about 18 more one-sided screaming conversations on the hallway telephone.
Yeah, right. They have a whole system of like code words that they made up.
They bought some walkie-talkies.
Oh yeah, they thought those walkie-talkies would work from each other's house to the other house.
Right. It's a 35 miles in the box. Yes,
so disappointing as a kid, isn't it? Walkie-talkie range is never as advertised.
Hey, they wanna
let go. So, yeah, so again, everyone's coming here, right? Luthen's coming by motorcycle.
Mm-hmm.
Sergeant and Cyril are coming by public transportation. Deidre has already arrived, and they've kind of like planned for how they think this funeral is going to go.
Mm-hmm.
Andor has come and, you know, had a few run-ins with folks. And we're about ready for the big party, aren't we?
Yeah, everyone's watching out for Andor, or just, you know, wanting to have a nice funeral march, right?
Love this funeral march. Love these instruments.
Yeah. It looks like they're all, or it seemed to me like they were all playable. Like they were all just, you know, either just instruments with extra crap on them, or, you know, but they were all like they were, like maybe
they would really work.
Right.
Yeah, they had a bit of a, like, they're a little more realistic, but had almost like a Dr. Seuss kind of quality to them.
Yeah, that's a good call. Yeah, they have, they're, I don't know.
Oompas and bloopas and, right, or, you know, like.
Farsgarslers and,
something like that. The Grinch is up on Mount Crumpet just pissed off about this funeral.
Oh man, who is
the Grinch who lived just north of Ferrix? Did not.
Who is the Grinchiest? The Grinchiest character
in Andor? That's a great question,
man.
I think it's the guy. I think you gave him the fur jacket last time. The like catcher, like black jacket fascist guy.
Oh,
who works for the Empire?
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. That's a good call. I think
he takes a brick to the face here later.
we can get to that here in a second. But yeah, Cassian's mom was just very, very like, yes, please use me as an instrument of just being Imperials in the face as a brick.
Yeah, that's a definite wish fulfillment right there. She's a brick.
House.
I like the little moment of Andor visiting, I guess, the brick of his like father figure earlier in the episode.
Oh yeah, we got a nice little flashback there. That's right.
I don't know. Any thoughts about the marching band in general that we haven't hit on?
Yeah, I like the I guess you have like the Daughters of Ferrix, right, in their in their little red, right? And they kind of all kind of, you know, somberly meet in the middle before they just go into like a, you know, a John Philip Sousa towards the Imperials, right?
This is like, I don't know, it's so like, it feels so almost like mid-century America real, doesn't it? Like,
yeah,
having this like Daughters of the Revolution kind of like social club, mm-hmm. and having the like community band, like, you know, you still run into like, it's the kind of band that will play when you like unveil a statue at the park,
right? Yes.
It just feels like so real to our world and even more real to their world.
That is a recurring thought with Andor. Everything just does seem very authentic.
Yeah. Yeah. And
believable.
I don't know that the world building has ever been as good as it is in Andor.
Oh, I think you're absolutely right about that.
So Gilroy, who wrote it, I think like, gosh, there was a couple real life antecedents for this, but I don't remember what they were. They were like maybe North African or some like colonized group that he like solved it. No, it was Ireland is what it was.
Oh, I could see this being like, yeah,
it was
like,
an Irish like troubles
mining town or something like that. Yeah.
That some of the kind of funerals they had for folks who had been killed by the English,
mm-hmm.
that there's these like videos of those funerals and they have this very similar kind of vibe to it, I think was the real life inspiration for a lot of the funeral stuff here.
Wow. Yeah. I buy that completely.
So Marva has a bit of like a giant Snoke kind of projector built right. into her robo dog.
I mean, when don't you need that?
That's a nice feature. I, you know, it's a little bit like, I guess she was sick and new, but it has that sort of like Star Trek, like after the character dies, their projector like gives their crap away and tells Data that they liked having robot sex with them. Kind right. of like, I don't know, these like messages from the death always feel weird to me.
Like, do you have to, it's like your will, like, do you just go and update it every, you know, every so often or yeah, whatever?
Like, what if she was obviously like 30 years younger and keeps bringing up people that no one knows? Right.
No one around.
But I will say, this whole scene, the way this episode is constructed, I am shocked at the amount of confidence you have to have in this whole, because I would just think on paper it would feel silly, like a giant projection mm-hmm. of dead character preaching at you for 5 minutes. Like, there's so many ways that can go wrong, but if it doesn't work, the whole episode collapses.
Oh yeah. I mean it works too, because there's so much going on during the speech. I mean, there's, you know, you've got, you know, our favorite sergeant and Cyril just hanging out. I think like someone's ratted out where Andor was. They got some troopers going over there. I mean, it's such a tense moment. You get the funeral goers and the Imperial staring each other down, right?
Yeah, a lot of fun. Fun. What's going on? Fun misdirection.
Chekhov's bombs in play somewhere.
That's right. That's definitely right. Yeah, and the whole speech turns out to be great too. It's very moving. We have the, what am I trying to say? The violent delights that these violent dreams, you know, lead to. And a real just kind of great, you know, explosion of climax. So I guess, you know, the Empire thought that they had laid a certain kind of bait for Andor, but they kind right. of ignored like the actual like better bait, which was that they had his friend, you know, in jail, and he's able to free her instead.
I love Cyril's kind of reaction when he realizes that our favorite ISB officer is there. He's like, she's here.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
so much fun.
Yeah. Gestapo Dream Girl is here.
Right.
It's so funny. He is so smitten. It would be cute if it wasn't disgusting.
I know. When they end up in that storeroom or whatever, it's.
What did you think about all that? Because, so I'll put my cards on the table a little bit.
Yeah.
Every time I watched a new episode, I thought this is where they loop Cyril back in, and they kept just shitting on him instead. The character just gets shit on episode after episode. I kept thinking, oh, this is where he'll make some kind of turn. And then, like, you know, by two episodes ago at this point, I just think, like, oh no, this guy's just pathetic and he doesn't. But then he did at the end. You know, he does have this kind of, like, you know, play for glory, and is he going to win the affection of his dream girl? I don't know. Mm-hmm. It felt a little weird to me.
I mean, I still wouldn't put it past the show of just him just, you know, getting a, you know, gee thanks and, you know, straight back into his, you know, his world of, you know, mediocrity, I guess, or, you know, just being damaged goods. You know, he desperately wants to be in the ISB, I think. I don't know. I don't know if he would ever just not be, you know, a fuck up at it.
Yeah.
For lack of a better word.
It's hard to believe. Does he save Deidre? I don't fully remember what exactly happens here.
So Deidre, I think, gets knocked down, right? And you know, like a mob kind of starts dragging her off. And Cyril, you know, I think just kind of dressed as a civilian, you know, kind of like pulls her into a storeroom or something. Like out of the clutches of the mob, and Deidre recognizes him at that point. I think that's the last we see of them for this episode too. So who knows what went on in that storeroom, Scott?
Man, yeah, I'm sure Cyril's manifesto has, you know, imagined a few possible outcomes above his shower. So yeah, I mean, it's a great action scene. There's like a whole throwaway scene of the sergeant like drinking from his
drinking. Yes. I love that. Just, you know, he's you know, his buddy ditched him, right, for the girl. He's just he didn't get to punch anybody or get Andor. He's just, you know, has wasted his only day off that he gets once every 10 years for nothing.
Yeah. He doesn't have a sick day now.
Yeah, he's just got to go back to his smelting job for forever.
The sergeant drinking from that flask is, I don't know, it's like framed so, like, it's such a cool shot. So I guess the penultimate scene does go back to Mothma, and she's sold out her husband, and then she sells out her Sunday school devoted daughter, doesn't she?
Right. I mean, the daughters, I guess, is probably into this at this point. You know, this is, assuming this is what Sunday school is all about, arranged marriages and, you know, whatever other Chandrillan stuff's going on.
Sure. And even the husband is like, ew. Like, even he's like, I don't like this. He doesn't strike me as the religious type.
Yeah. What's going to be great is he just, after all this, he just turns to gambling.
Right. Squanders her fortune. She has nothing left to give to the rebellion.
Yeah, just you know, the accusation alone. This was like, well.
And then the last scene is Andor confronting Luthen.
Right. You know, he messed up and parked in his same spot from, I guess, from when they left the first time.
Yeah. Luthen has been a fun spectator this episode, hasn't he?
Yeah, I guess the only reason Cassian knows he was here because he saw him earlier, right, in town.
Yeah.
In his very, very conspicuous, like, black, you know, can't see me clothes that Luthen was wearing in town. Yeah.
I really love the scenes of Luthen watching the Marva speech, the Marva, you know, Snoke projection scene. Like, it's like he's doing, like, it's hitting him in a certain kind of way, right?
Yeah, she's I guess in death is doing maybe more than he thinks he's doing now, you know, in terms of, you know, inciting people to real change as opposed to just kind of working in the background.
Right. And I guess it's got to be like affirming of a certain kind of timeline. Like, mm-hmm. how do you know, if you're the Lenin of the show, which he is, you know, how do you know, like, the time is ripe or not? And I think it's sort of proof of concept that now is the time. And we also get that as viewers of the show from some of the Nimic Manifesto clips, which also work.
Mm-hmm.
And Andor's in, right? That's the way the show ends. Andor has signed his soul to the rebellion.
And I always wondered if Luthen thought maybe, like, if he would even see this kind of, you know, open revolt in his lifetime, or if it was going to be, you know, like a generational thing. You know, how long was this actually going to take? I think he's getting, like you said, some strong evidence of that.
Yeah, that's a really good question. An equally good question, Chris. Did you find anyone highly conspicuous in these two episodes that you want to give the fur jacket to?
I live for furs. I worship furs.
Gold jacket, green jacket, who gives it?
Oh, please, won't you see my vest?
I couldn't keep my eyes off of him. You know, I certainly couldn't understand what he was saying, but, you know, it really just gave me more attention just to stare at him. But, yeah, my pick is back on the prison planet, you know, our favorite wet-netted Captain Hook alien who didn't even attempt to speak English.
Yeah, that Captain Hook hand is, it seems like he's almost got, like, Mega Man kind of shit, right? Like, he can use different power-ups on it, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's got some attachments for it for sure. If you ever turn on the subtitles for like that scene, like some of them are fairly hilarious. I'm trying to find one I can send you here. It's like, you know, like grunting agreement something like that.
I love that. Like, yeah, very alien-y for sure. Mine is, it's on Ferrix. I mean, you don't have to go to it. The timestamp is around like...
No, we're going to
it. Around like 11:15. It's after Andor has had the little flashback to his dad, Clem. And there's like a shop or something. And there's this like kind of fake robot there.
Yeah, what is that guy? It's like, that's great.
Yeah, gas barrel R2-D2 kind of guy.
is this like the old like Indian chief or whatever?
Yeah, I used to see.
Elijah.
Yes, it's the Cell Cigar Indian chief.
Right.
There's a sign above it that in the Arvesh font says Droid Parts.
Oh, that's great.
So it's definitely like the storefront Indian for the tobacco store.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I just love this comedy guy. Again, it felt very real, you know, like the kind of weird like fake bug sculpture outside of like that would be on Del Gribble's car kind of thing.
Right. Yeah.
Like, I feel like I've seen the real-world version of this so many times.
Once again, Andor bringing the realism. That's fantastic.
So, what about, you know, rating this last little arc on the Brian Mitchell Memorial Rankings? Go all the way back to our Andor or Ewok movie review. On a scale from 0 stars up to I Love DVD.
Worst Cosmic Wars ever.
Academy Award for best movie ever made.
I'm afraid this gets my lowest rating ever. 7 thumbs up.
It's tough not to just kind of treat this as like a, you know, overall impression of Andor, but yeah, I mean, I loved, you know, how the story came together. You know, I loved the ending. Yeah, I'm in an I Love DVD for these two. I'm just, you know, I'm probably giving it more into the broader love for Andor, but yeah, that's where I'm at.
Yeah.
How about you?
Right there with you. Right there in I Love DVD. Any last thoughts?
Nothing else. I'm trying to temper my expectations for the next season. You know, I'm hopeful it can come in to maintain, but I mean, even if it's just a fraction of this, I think it's still going to be pretty good.
Yeah, I used to say, like, oh, this has been so good. Even if they give me a bad season, you know, I won't feel disappointed. And then I watched Mando season 3. So I don't want to say that anymore.
our conspicuously absent Mando season 3 review.
Right. But yeah, no, it's, I have a lot of confidence that that we'll keep getting the goods. Would be nice if the studios would just agree to pay the people who make the shows so they could get on with making them, but, you know.
Yeah, imagine that, being paid a reasonable wage for your work. Yeah.
You can't expect the writers of Andor to churn these things out like so many Death Star refractor windows or whatever the hell they're
making. Oh man, that's true. Do you want to discuss that, or we good there?
oh, that was the post credit scene. Yeah, I guess we chatted about that a little bit in the last episode.
Yeah, we kind of already did. Yeah.
Something I would like to say before we end real fast is I watched a movie recently, Chris, that I think our listener needs to know about.
Oh, do tell.
And it was called A Disturbance in the Force.
Uh-huh.
And it's a documentary that is about the making of the holiday special, which is obviously super near and dear to this podcast. Probably not as much as the Ewok movie, but very close.
Yeah, shit, that's right up our alley.
Mm-hmm. So it has a sort of like what went wrong kind of like, I think, raison d'etre. Like it wants to dig in. Like, it's easy to be like us and just make fun of it, and it does do that. But I think it's kind of like trying to understand how it came to be. It's almost like a little bit of an oral history of the thing. It played at the Sidewalk Film Festival. That's a festival here in Birmingham where Chris and I live. And it was, I mean, I think everyone in the audience, some who were probably not Star Wars fans, I think reacted really well to it. It was just like very slick, very well made. And so it's called A Disturbance in the Force. And I would encourage people to look out for it for whenever it's, you know, whenever it becomes streaming or whatever.
Yeah, we need to throw that on the schedule, I think. If you think it'd be worth talking about.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. You know, they hit the beats, the you know, why did Chewbacca's dad get a masturbation device? but it also just does a lot of, I think, like, good contextualizing. Like, kind of like, well, it turns out, like, the late 70s had a lot of weird shit on TV, and this was not the worst, you know? like there was other bizarre TV specials.
I guess that's true. You have to looking at it in the broader, like, what the fuck was going on?
yeah. Like, we come at it comparing it to Star Wars content, and I think it does a good bit of contextualizing to say, like, well, don't, like, yeah, it's weird from that perspective, but, like, from the perspective of just late 70s TV content, it's still bad, but not quite as shocking. And they talk about, you know, just some of the other weird, you know, kind of in between Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back, sort of before Lucasfilm had their shit together, like this really weird, like, Donny Osmond special where Donny Osmond is playing Luke and they're all like singing Stormtroopers and just other kind of weird stuff. So it provides, I think, a lot of good context, a lot of great interviews, just a fun watch if any of our listener wants to keep an eye out for that. Yeah, so we'll be back with something sometime soon. There's so much content, shockingly more content than I think we ever predicted when we started doing this. There's Ahsoka's out now. There's multiple shows we've not talked about. There's old visions we didn't get to, new visions.
We still haven't gotten to. Yeah.
Right. We could just throw it all to the wind and pick some random scenes. There's no shortage of stuff we could do.
Maybe we'll let our Lord and Savior, the wonky computer, decide.
That's true. The wonky computer and number generator has been far too long absent from the show. So hopefully, that is definitely the Chandrillan Bible School that we go to. And it is the arranged marriage that we have been bound to. It is a plural marriage. We are both married to the Wonka computer. So, all right, I'll talk to you soon. Oh, I guess, you know, thank the listeners, thank the maker, thank the Computer Music All-Stars for the music. Email us at researchdroids@gmail.com.
If you have gambling money you need to get rid of, check us out on patreon.com/weservedroids.
And we will see you soon.
How tall is the Lilucon Tauntaun if you had to get? Could Miles ride the Tauntaun? I guess let's start there.
Yeah, it's not big enough for Miles. It'd be big enough for like a, you know, like the, I guess Luke is close to the 12-inch size.
Oh, okay. So it's,
and
so it's,
and then the Tauntaun is, you know, to scale bigger than that.
Wow. So could you slice up the Tauntaun and shove Luke in there? is the burning question.
Well, it's for another episode, I guess. All right.
She's a brick. You guys look like, what do they look like, Jimmy?
Dorks. They look like a couple of dorks.